Thank you. Good morning. And it's fun to be last. Do I have 20 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, great. I don't want to run out of time, so I want to acknowledge my contributing authors that are here. I have Heather Patrick and James Tolson and Dr. Jenny Gallagher, and also my business analysis counterpart in NICV, Linda Vidal, who I collaborate with on our joint projects. I'm a part of the FLIP team in CCID. And Linda not only helped with the presentation, but is a trailblazer in using this methodology. it's also worth mentioning that I'm a member of the IIBA, the Institute of International Business Analysis, and which contains the business analysis body of work. And I draw extensively on that along with my experience in trying to pull together methodologies that are structured and repeatable. So today we're going to introduce to you a model, business process model, which we call enhanced business process modeling. And before that, give you a little bit of background and a short case study to try to demonstrate that. And what we hope that you take from this is what makes this model or this methodology unique and what makes it useful in deriving laboratory requirements for interoperability, as well as hopefully some thoughts on how you can take this back to your organization and use it or customize it for use for you. So I'm glad that others before me have already explained FLIP and STAR LIMS or the LIMS at CCID. I won't go into that, but I will say that as a business analyst supporting FLIP and other efforts that affect the CCID LIMS, we come across the challenge of writing good requirements for the design, and that's already been acknowledged as a challenge of every organization for every project. And I think everyone's in agreement that functionality or capability for information systems are key to getting what you want out of the system. And that includes use cases, which a lot of people are familiar with. But what about things like your constraints, your guidelines, your privacy issues with your data, as well as the challenges that you have in pulling information out of one laboratory system and sharing it with the outside world? Those are also requirements that need to be considered outside of functional requirements, and the challenge becomes how do you capture those? And fortunately, there are many requirements analysis techniques to use, and I can also say that unfortunately, there are many requirements analysis techniques to use. And it becomes a matter of trying to determine which method is going to penetrate and get the information that's needed. They all have their positive attributes. Requirements workshops, JAT sessions, for instance, are very popular. And those are great for bringing together bringing out commonalities across functions or across organizations. But as Wayne and Nathan pointed out, when you have customization issues in the lab, you might not have an individual who's willing to share their unique requirement with a large group. So you might have to go to other techniques. Interviews are very, very useful in getting detailed information from stakeholders for what is needed in a LIMS or an interoperability system. However, interviews are only as good as the interviewer. They're only as good as the interviewee is willing to cooperate, and they're also very painstakingly time-consuming. So, what is the end of the story? What is the answer? And hopefully, we can give you the Cliff Note version, which is business process modeling. Business process modeling is a technique that is accepted in the business analysis world as a way to organize complex workflows. And I think most people in the laboratory would argue or agree that their workflows are complex with a lot of branching and exceptions to consider. So using a picture, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, usually helps everyone to conceptualize what's going on sequentially within the lab. But even with business process modeling as one type of technique, there are many type of models. There are many types of applications to produce models, and the different types of models capture different types of requirements still. You might have models that capture how the data flows, as well as models that would capture the sequence or who handles what. So again, we're faced with what is a way that we can show a comprehensive view of what is needed by a laboratory to fulfill their work processes. So I'm going to give you, I can't give you the answer to the Common Cold. And that question of what the best method is still being sorted out. But what we can do is share with you some of the things that were used or that are considered or heavy considerations when looking for a method to generate your requirements or gather your requirements. Definitely, by all means, a user perspective is desirable over a LIMS perspective or over a technology perspective. You want to be able to have a system that meets the current needs of the workflow that's in place that would minimize changing processes, and it minimizes training on the back end of introducing technology. Secondly, obviously, if we're talking about interoperability, data and information exchange is the highly critical factor. So you're looking for a method of capturing requirements that will allow you to generate not only sequential flow of activities, but how is the data exchanged and what data is exchanged. In the case of CCID, that where 90 plus labs are looking to be implemented into a interoperability system, then it's important that we have a method that's repeatable and structured and dependable that that can allow the requirements to be consistently captured in the same way for each laboratory. And also, because you have different laboratories involved and different organizations involved, it's important to have tools that can transcend these organizations. So in other words, if you have modeling tools that are very proprietary, then they may not speak to other organizations that don't have access to those tools. So we like to introduce what we call the enhanced BPM. For lack of another term, it's basically a business process modeling with some structure around it. And that structure is a specific notation and also an algorithm on how to use that notation. Okay, there's a lot I could say about BPMN. BPMN stands for Business Process Modeling Notation. It is a specified language that is maintained by, I always forget, I have to look up by the Object Management Group, the OMG. And right now, BPMN N1.2 is being used. And there's a spec that can go over in detail all of the different elements, and it's just far more than we could touch on in this presentation. But in general, it's a standard for business process modeling that strives to be intuitive and understandable by not only the business user, but the stakeholder as well as the developers. And the different symbols can go as deep and complex as you need them to be into even language, programming language type modeling. But if any of you all are familiar with flow charting or UML, then you can intuitively adapt to BPMNN, which has similar symbols. So the major ones, the major elements are activities or tasks, and we have data elements, which we're showing as a little piece of paper with the flip. You have control and sequencing, and then you have termination points. And then you also, not shown here, have the ability to show functional divisions across where data or information is being exchanged. Okay. We mentioned that the enhanced BPMN involves not only a language or a set of symbols and notation, but also a domain ontology. And that's just a really fancy way of saying that you have in your world, in your world where you're incorporating interoperability, you have a shared vocabulary, and you have a shared understanding and agreement as to what the elements are going to stand for as you move from modeling to requirements. So in this case, in the simplified domain, the following relationships, we can say that the following relationships exist. When you see data elements, that's an indication that the LIMS is going to address data and vocabulary requirements. When you see decision flows, that's an indication that you have policies and guidelines that will dictate in what decisions are made ultimately. And when you see branching within the sequence, then that will indicate exceptions within a workflow. And message flows that go from one organization to another is an indication of the presence of interface requirements that would need to be looked at. The last element of the framework is an algorithm. So not only do you have the notation and a domain ontology that defines the relationship between the elements, but you also have a recipe, kind of do this, do that. And again, this can be changed to whatever works for your organization, but what has worked well in CCID is to follow these steps as a whole. And that's to observe the as-is, and that was referenced a couple of times before me, to document that workflow. Usually, that provokes some discussion, which leads to modification. And the modification is twofold. You know, I'm sure you're familiar, if you've ever analyzed your own workflow or charted it out, is you might have discussions such as this. Why am I doing that? Or you do that, well, I do this. Well, you change that data from Word to Excel, but I take it from Excel and I put it in Word. So discussion will lead to some optimization as well as automation. At this point, moving from the to be to the as is the point where the automation is considered. Where are we going to let the information system take over some of the tasks that were formerly done manually? Once the 2B system is documented, which I didn't include that as a bullet, but that's implied, then you will have the ability to identify high-level requirements at that point. You'll be able to see, based on your domain ontology, where there are going to be the presence of user requirements or interface requirements or data vocabulary requirements, as well as the functional requirements. And then that enables you to move on to better select an analysis technique. So the analysis techniques that I mentioned before, I'm not throwing those away. I'm just stating that using a modeling tool first will better position you to select the correct analysis tool to dig deeper for your requirements. As the observer is modeling the as-is process, good questions to ask are things such as this. What data tools do you need to perform your action? What data is produced as a result of this activity? Are there exceptions to moving to the next step? Do you always move from step A to step B, or are there times when things are different? Are there business constraints or policies, guidelines that are restricting you or enabling you to do things a certain way? What capabilities do you need from an information system that would make this easier for you? And also, who is the user that is allowed to perform this action, and what are the constraints around that user? Those are some of the types of questions that should be asked at each step in documenting modeling in order to be able to see where the information is flowing. Also, I want to go back one more time to mention that what is a little bit unique about BPMN notation over some of the other modeling notations is that you do have the capability to show event sequence, activity sequence, along with data sequence and flow in the same diagram. Okay, so some of the benefits. Overall, modeling in general provides a benefit over some of the other requirements analysis techniques to use as a first step, because when queried, users rarely remember what they do in their laboratories. It's just difficult, and I think it's not just laboratory users. You can ask a mother what she does, and she will give you the highlights, but she might not remember that, oh yeah, while the bottle's in the microwave, then I also have to feed the dog on the side. So modeling in general allows the opportunity to observe and ask and query, well, why are you also using, if you have this lens, why are you also using this piece of equipment over here? These are things that users will forget to bring to a JAD session, and they may forget to include that in an interview as well. Many ideas are exchanged also as workflows are modeled and problematic areas come out, and there's an opportunity to address those. So with the few minutes I have left remaining, there's a case study, and there's a lot of words there, but in simple terms, we're going to show at a very high level how to apply this enhanced business process modeling to receive a specimen and then to accession it and send it out to another laboratory. And even though this looks like it's from the state perspective and I'm representing CDC, that's not unlike what our stat lab and Brat lab does when specimens come into us. It's accessioned and then sent to the testing lab. So we understand the scenario very well. And here is modeled conveniently on one slide, but I will share that my actual model of our stat lab is about 18 pages with far more than this. So this is very simplified, but just to show you the use of the BPMN notation and also to give you a perspective that where the red bubbles are, these are where requirements we would need to dig a little bit deeper to get these requirements. The first one, I don't know if you can read it from where you're in, but checking in a package from the laboratory is at the top, the LIMS is on the bottom. Oh, by the way, I'm starting with the 2B system. I didn't start with the as-is. So we're logging in package information, and that would be an example of various types of requirements, user requirements as well as functional requirements. And also tracking, the system would be asked to generate some tracking information that was mentioned in the previous presentation, the specimen IDs. That's a functional requirement. That's a capability that the LIMS would have. We also have some data vocabulary requirements here where you need to transfer from maybe another LIMS or either from paper information that comes in about the specimen and then information that goes out. And then tracking information is also sent to another system, maybe a report system. So these represent interface requirements. So after the point is, after using the enhanced business process modeling framework, you are in a position as an analyst to now use whatever method you need, develop a prototype if necessary, talk to a user about screenshots or reports to get those specific details more tightly defined, and then starting off in the beginning without having a model and knowing exactly what's needed. So I'm at the end of my presentation, and what I hope that you've seen is that the enhanced business process modeling is nothing new. It's just a culmination of what's already existing, but paired up with an algorithm and a little definition or a domain ontology specification. The business, the notation, the ontology, the algorithm together equal enhanced BPM, and it provides some structure that's repeatable, and it provides an opportunity to capture comprehensive requirements for LIMS interoperability. And these are my references. I mentioned the BPMN specification that's available easily on the web, and also the business analysis body of knowledge, unified modeling language. So I believe this is where we are. Thank you.